is acknowledge the Gadigal and Wangal people of the Eora Nation, on whose country we are meeting on today, their elders past and present. Next is declarations of interest, and there will be one declaration of interest when we come to item 7. It's usual when we start these meetings by us introducing ourselves so that you know who we are. I'm David Lloyd. I'm a lawyer. I'm a QC with a current practising certificate. I'm a former judge of the Land and Environment Court. I'm a former acting judge of the Supreme Court. I'm currently an adjunct professor of law at Western Sydney University, and I chair three other local planning panels. Mrs. Taylor.
Mary Lynn Taylor. I'm here as an expert member today. I'm a planning lawyer, and I sit on many panels, including the state panel for the Central District.
Jan Morrell. I also have some 45 years' experience as a town planner. I sit on numerous panels in the Sydney region and chair panels as well. And prior to retiring, I was a commissioner with the Land and Environment Court for 14 years.
I'm the community representative on the panel. I live in Ashfield. I'm also a planner of many years. And I'm actually an expert member on a number of other council's panels.
All right. Well, with that, we can move straight on to the items listed in the agenda. There are 10 items before us. I can advise that we inspected the site of these developments earlier in the day and are familiar with what is proposed. The first item is item 1. This is the proposed change of use of the former police lockup in Darling Street to a gym. Some might say that's an appropriate use for a former police lockup. There are no objections to this development, and it has been recommended for approval. The panel is prepared to adopt that recommendation, subject to a couple of additional conditions. Firstly, there will be an additional condition requiring removal of the graffiti on the facade of the building within 24 hours of the grant of this consent. And the second change is condition 4, which is amended to read as follows. Condition 4B, and I'll read it out. More detail is to be added to the existing and proposed plans of 707 Darling Street by a qualified heritage consultant that identifies the surviving elements of the former police station retained in the 1989 works, etc. So that is the way that condition will read. Let's make sure we've got it right. Item 2 is a proposal for alterations and additions to an existing dwelling house at 67 Ballast Point Road, Birch Grove. As I indicated, the panel inspected the site of this development earlier in the day. We appreciate what is proposed. We also visited the adjoining property at number 65, I think it is, Ballast Point Road, and viewed the proposal from that property. We have noticed that there is a number of people who wish to address us on this proposal. Firstly, Susan Yule. You're deferring to your significant other, yes. Now, Mr. Peregnon, would you like... You have to be recorded. This meeting is being recorded, so you have to take a seat at the end of the table and press the button on the microphone in front of you so that you're recorded. And you are limited to 3 minutes. I should advise that we do have your written material.
Yes.
Proceed.
We're the owners of Nursens of 65, and we asked the panel to defer the hearing to enable us to submit asbestos and heritage reports, obtain access to documents not provided, and representation. Council's own heritage officers rejected this proposal in two reports not provided to the panel. Council's stated position in those reports that demolition of the add-on could only be supported if amended plans were lodged, drastically reducing the upper story in size so that it only appeared from the street as a single story with hipped roof and no bridge link to comply with the LEP. This led objectors to legitimately expect council to reject the application and not recommend it unless the applicant lodged such amended plans. No such amended plans were lodged, but just 5 business days ago, council recommended it for approval, contrary to its own heritage advice, changed its published position without informing objectors at a time when we are no longer able to submit reports, which is manifestly procedurally unfair. There's no explanation for this drastic change of position, except a council email about a backroom meeting shows council tailored its recommendation to conform to everything favourable to the applicant in the pre-DA. It's not an impartial process. The assessment report itself contains statements capable of misleading. At 67, it says all the issues raised by council's heritage experts are discussed in the report. That's untrue. It conveys the impression that independent heritage experts have examined this application, have never found any heritage issues adverse to approval other than those disclosed. That's also untrue, and it's procedurally unfair for the panel to proceed on misleading evidence. The non-complying 6-metre eastern wall proposed on the boundary should be set back the required 2 metres under the DCP. It's excessive in bulk and scale, extremely oppressive over the entire side of our house at second-storey level, removes our side water views from areas regularly used, and it'll dominate our open space. The submitted plans have not even reduced the northeastern corner as demanded in the pre-DA and in every report since, and the condition at 1A at page 69 of the report should be included, but with a 2-metre setback along the entire wall. In the report, council concedes the floor-to-ceiling heights have not been minimised at 56 and the cumulative criteria of C8 have not been met. Now, we comply, everyone else complies, why should this applicant not comply? The asbestos sheets can be easily removed without demolishing a heritage item, meeting health and safety grounds, just as is proposed in the attic room. The applicant's own report recommends removal of all internal asbestos panels at 7 to 12, but doesn't say they can't be. We have a report now that safe removal is possible, and we ask the panel to receive it. There is no structural report or any evidence of structural issues, so the proposal fails to comply with the DCP for heritage demolition, C1.2, which is fundamental. As for the form and scale, council officers found the bulk and form are inconsistent with the streetscape. It doesn't preserve public views, the stark contrast of form and oblique views is incompatible with the neighbourhood, and the roof is inappropriate, and rejected it. The boundary to boundary, I've just got 3 or 4 more matters. I wonder. Thank you, panel members. Thank you, panel members. Now, the boundary-to-boundary rectangular box forms wider than the cottage, clearly visible from the side, from Ballast Point and Dock Roads, a very popular walking route, and it's highly obtrusive, as shown in the street perspectives, which are available in the file. The ground floor glass roof link looks straight into our daughter's bedroom to her dressing table, and she'll have to look down into their passageway between the bedroom and the bathrooms. We asked the panel to look at the email of 26 October from Council, which shows Council tailored its recommendation against its own heritage advice to give the applicant the benefit of anything in the pre-DA, which was good for the applicant, but nothing adverse. In that, the manager states in that email, below is the reply I'm sure you'll agree is consistent with the advice that was provided in Council's pre-DA letter. This was a private meeting between Council and the applicant's advisers, of which minutes have never been published. Nobody other than the applicant was informed until, of course, it was too late. The pre-DA is not binding, clearly states the views expressed may vary. At that time, the full plans weren't available and there was no site minute. If nothing can be changed after the pre-DA and all objections and heritage reports are ignored, the process is not impartial and it's an inexcusable waste of public money. And this panel referral is designed to promote and give the appearance of fairness of process, and that can't be achieved. Heritage report of council states there should be no bridge link because it fails to enhance the integrity of the original form, which has already been compromised and constitutes a justification for further compromise in breach of C13 C4. Now, the cellar should also be set back 1 metre from the eastern boundary to prevent risks to our boundary. In October 2017, the owner removed the internal staircase without approval, and the panel shouldn't reward such behaviour. Thank you, panel members. Well, I do wish to submit the asbestos report, which we were denied by procedural unfairness from getting. We've now been able to get one, moving hell and high water, and we ask that the panel accept it in those circumstances and rely on it. It's the report that states that all this asbestos is nothing and can easily be removed. It's just a few panels, easily removed, has to be removed anyway, and so yes, that demolition isn't required. And we ask the panel to... And we also ask the panel to read the two heritage reports, which are referred to in the outline of submissions, dated 3 July and 30 July, which don't appear to have been provided to the panel at all, which give the council's own heritage advice rejecting this proposal and the reasons, the very well-reasoned reasons why.
Thank you, Mr. Perignon.
You're
welcome.
Yeah.
Now,
are you going to accept the, David?
We'll have a look at it. We'll have to adjourn to read it, no doubt. Yes.
She's asked that he speak on her concerns. She's not a neighbour.
Mr. Perignon, we have a written objection from Dr. Jacqueline Corner, and she says that she has asked you to speak on her behalf. I think. Do you do that now?
Yes, I might just mention a few more things.
I mean, we have her written objection, but she has written to us. She apologises for not being here. She can't be here. And she asks that you deliver her submission on her behalf. So would you like to do that now?
Yes, Dr. Corner wishes to object to the proposal. Where
does she live? Where does she live?
54, so it's on the... which way is north? West, southwestern side. So it's across the road from the proposed building, but about four houses down to the on the west of Dock Road, western side of Dock Road.
On the opposite side? Road.
Yes, on the opposite side.
Thank you. All right.
About four, yes.
Yes. Proceed.
And she wishes to object on the grounds the existing rear wing of the heritage cottage should be retained because it's a heritage item. And the proposed addition at second story, which is a rectangular box shape, is incompatible with the existing front cottage and with the streetscape. And it breaches a number of the provisions of the DCP, which are set out in the second heritage report dated 3 July. It'll be highly visible from the street, especially from the side in oblique views, obtrusive and unsympathetic to the front cottage, and the proposed roof form's incompatible with the roof form of the front cottage and surrounding houses. The DCP requires that roofs of this nature and on such developments be pitched or hipped. And I can take the panel to those provisions, but no doubt the panel's well aware of them. It doesn't meet the DCP requirements in those respects, and one should note there's a reference in the report to complying with the building typology. No building typology has a flat roof. They all have pitched roofs. No building typology in section B is a wall to wall, that is boundary to boundary addition like this. They are all less than. Some of them hit the touch the boundary on one side, but not on the other. It fits no such typology. That's all I wish to say on Dr. Quinn. Thank you, panel.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Perignon. Now, we have a number of people who wish to address us on behalf of the applicant. Who on behalf of the applicant wishes to do so? We have a number of speakers listed. Come forward, please. Are you on? All right. First of all, your name and address, please.
Good afternoon, Chairperson and panel members. My name's Rob Freeman. I'm a resident of 39 Evans Street in Balmain, and I am the owner of 67 Ballast Point Road and the applicant for this process. Thank you for your time this afternoon, Mr. Chairman and other panel members, to discuss this council-endorsed restoration and extension with you. My wife, Katrina Freeman, joins me today at the back. There's two points I'd just like to leave you with today, please. Firstly, just some context on what we are proposing for the property to ensure its positive contribution to the Balmain Peninsula. And then secondly, we're obviously happy with the approval recommendation, but some of the deferred commencement conditions proposed by Council, which seek to modify our professional design, we'd be keen to discuss those. We're appealing to panel members today to approve our plans on their overall merit and given the overall compliance of the design. So firstly, just starting with context, during your site visit this morning, you can clearly see that the property is dilapidated and in a state of disrepair. At 150 years old, the property in its current form requires significant restorations to ensure its positive contribution to the community and overall heritage significance of the peninsula. We've been residents for over 10 years. Our proposal makes a positive contribution to the public domain within the precinct. The current assessment proposal with Council has been approximately 12 months after several negotiation rounds with Council officers and several resubmitted plans. We've already sacrificed height, FSR, setback, a pool, a pantry, noting that my wife Katrina is a chef, a living room, the terrace location, amongst other concessions. We feel that in arriving at our present proposal, we've developed a well-conceived, holistic design, which is now in a form ready for approval. I would like to take this opportunity to highlight a couple of Council's recommended conditions. We think they have no necessary contribution to the proposal's impact on the environment or neighbourhood amenity, and for this reason, I question whether some of these conditions are justified. We would like to ask the panel members for the removal of several deferred commencement conditions where appropriate. We appeal to members today for the approval of our application, but ask members to please consider the removal of conditions 1A, 1C and 1D. Our planner, Jared, will discuss the matters regarding 1A and 1D. So this is the northeast corner modification being 1A and then the northern balcony returns being 1D. Kerra May, our heritage expert, will discuss the proposal for reinstatement of the staircase, which is item 1C. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Could I have another 30 seconds, please? Simon, our architect, will also discuss the compliance concerns we have with the BCA on that staircase as part of 1C. Overall, we feel that the consultants we've engaged have effectively worked with Council to achieve a quality proposal for these premises. Over 3 years ago, when we made the commitment to purchasing the property, we envisaged a unique family home that would strongly connect us to the historical attributes and rich characteristics of the area. We consider that the proposal's separated rear addition achieves a quality resolution in its current architectural form, and we request the support of panel members today to enable our commitment in undertaking the restoration of the property, which in turn secures the contribution of the item for the precinct and public viewing benefit for generations into the future. Thank you for your time today, and I'd just like to hand over to Simon just to discuss item 1C.
Good afternoon, Chairman and panel members. Thank you for your time. My name's Simon Vaughan. I'm the architect for this project. I'd just like to touch on some of those conditions. Firstly, I'd just like to mention condition 1A, which is quite a significant cut back into that northeastern corner. As the designer, I'm really going to struggle with that. I've looked at how we could make the living area work, and if you can see the plan, it really will be difficult. But anyway, our planner, Jared, will talk about the planning merits of that condition. I'd more like to talk about condition 1C, the reinstatement of an earlier stair. I've done a drawing here of what council are proposing. It's actually very steep, and it's completely non-compliant with the BCA. The BCA has a maximum riser height of 190 mil and going of 240. This will result in a stair with a riser height of 215 mil and a going of 215 mil, which is 45 degrees, and as you probably appreciate, that's very steep. It's actually dangerous, and it's well outside the BCA, you know, safety provisions. So I've got grave concerns about that. In addition, the barrier to the side is also below BCA compliance height. It will only be 830 millimetres, and the head height as you come down the stair is underneath the 2-metre minimum provision. So we've got a number of problems. It's way too steep. I mean, it's actually dangerously steep. It's the barrier is too low, and the head height is a danger. So secondly, it's also my professional duty to comply to the BCA. I've spoken to my professional indemnity insurer. He's basically said, look, his advice is, Simon, you can't knowingly design a stair that is so steep it's actually dangerous and, more importantly, non-compliant to the safe movement access of the BCA. He had serious concerns about liability, and his advice to me is I have to keep clear, we can't do that. I then have concerns about who's going to build it, their liability issues. Our position is we actually don't know how we can build this non-compliant stair conditioned by council. Secondly, even if we did build it to comply, I can pass this drawing around, but you'll see it will interfere with the doors, and then being a heritage item, we can't be moving those doors around. We do have a solution to do an interpretive stair, or interpretive elements in the stair, which our heritage consultant will discuss in detail. Thank you very much.
I have a question while you're there,
sure,
if I may. You've heard Mr. Perignon's submissions. One of the matters that he raised was a concern about the glass wall adjacent to the upper bathroom, which would look straight into his daughter's bedroom. It's window WG7, I think. If you look at the plans for the for that level, it's drawing number DA05, you'll see a window just outside the bathroom facing east. Do you see that? Yeah, it's that's the one.
The roof light.
No. It's on the wall. Do you have drawing number DA05 in front of you?
Yes.
Look at the bathroom.
Yes.
Look at the window adjacent to the bathroom, the east facing window.
Yes, that's WG7. Yes.
That is a concern to the Perignons because their daughter's bedroom is directly opposite that window.
Right.
What is that? Clear glass or translucent glass?
Yes, for heritage reasons. The heritage advisors and part of my original design was trying to provide separation between the existing dwelling and the new dwelling and the new addition. So you can read the existing building in its realm. So by using that glass window, you get to see the heritage item all the way around. And it's also on the ground floor. So it's not, ground floor windows usually aren't an overlooking issue. But
would there any be problem if we were to require that to be translucent glass?
I guess we can make it translucent. I would probably recommend, given the sight lines are high into the first floor bedroom.
The concern is that the daughter might see people wandering out of the bathroom wrapped
sure.
in a towel or something.
Yeah, my solution would be have opaque glassing down to, say, level 1.5, where the sight lines don't allow that.
But you wouldn't be adverse to at least that being done?
If that resolved that problem, I wouldn't be adverse. Or I think the heritage people were keen to see the whole building red, but I think
this is a privacy problem.
Yes.
The other substantial objection was raised by Mr. Perigno, was to query why the eastern wall had to be on the boundary.
Due to the thin nature of the site and the constraints of the BLZ and the constraints of having to set it away from the heritage item, we needed that floor space. And secondly, they've got a first floor that extends almost to the boundary as well, with no habitable windows or no windows in it. So if you look at this drawing, say, on DA06, you can see that the impact on their courtyard is very minimal. We comply to all the solar conditions. We comply to all the overshadowing. So there's no overshadowing problems and there's no solar problems. There's no view loss. They've got plenty of views out the front of their building. Sorry, out of the rear of the building. There's no view loss from any living space. So we felt that this was a satisfactory solution, and in Balmain it's very common to build to the boundaries as per, as their house is on their eastern side, being a terrace house. Thank you.
We'll hear from what the applicant has to say, because you have a heritage expert here, I believe. Please come forward.
Good afternoon, Chairman and panel members.
Your name and
yes,
who you are, please.
My name is Kerma Danis, and I'm Director Heritage at Cityplan, based in Sydney. I am a registered architect from Turkey and have a master's in heritage conservation with combined over 35 years' experience. I have been practicing as an architectural heritage consultant in New South Wales as well as nationally and internationally since 2001. I have extensive experience in heritage conservation and specialized in the in heritage conservation and specialized in the development of policies, statutory controls, and heritage studies for the management of heritage places. I am a past president of Australia ECOMOS, International Council on Monuments and Sites, and currently a member of the Heritage Council of New South Wales Approvals Committee and the Infrastructure Subcommittee. I will be providing only comments on heritage matters and specifically deferred commencement condition 1C that requires reinstatement of the stair and the wall that were recently demolished in the front portion of the dwelling. We have assessed the property in its current condition and have based our impact assessment of the proposed development according to relative significance of the existing fabric. Appearance and detailing of the existing stair didn't indicate heritage values that would warrant its protection. As heritage consultants, we are not required to investigate unauthorized work during historical research. I will be providing some historical overview in order to establish whether the recently demolished stair was an original fabric or not. The first recording of the 67 Ballast Point Road with improvements in 1876 following the purchase of the property in 1875 by John Stewart. The earliest plans of the cottage located on the subject site date to 1887 At this time, the subject site formed part of a wider site which incorporated 63 and 65 Ballast Point Road. Located on the subject site at the time is a dwelling named Calvinville, constructed of wood with a front and rear veranda. Two small wooden outbuildings were also located on the site to the rear of the cottage, perhaps incorporating a detached kitchen and lavatory. By the 1880s, the Birchgrove Peninsula had been substantially developed, particularly along the northern side of Ballast Point Road and along Birchgrove Road. This included a mix of dwellings and villas constructed of sandstone and brick, alongside middle-class and workers' housing. Okay, can I have a couple minutes?
What we are interested in is not so much the historical record that you've gone through, but the actual impact upon the heritage significance of what is proposed.
Okay, I'll just go to the last three dot points, which will clarify the position. Major external additions are known to have been undertaken on the property sometime between 1907 and 1927. And the attic with dormers could have been constructed during this period. The matchboard lining to the remote stair, when compared with the real estate photos, is in keeping with that of the ceiling in the attic space, and construction detailing at the newel post indicates that the stair necessitated modification to the skirting. In my opinion, evidence suggests that the stair in the real estate photos is not original to the building. However, its construction detailing suggests it is an early addition, which may be related to the 1907-1927 period works. Based on the non-compliance of the reinstatement of the non-original or the removed fabric, the staircase, my recommendation will be, because making it compliance will make the detailing for other openings inoperable and further modification to the space. There is already sufficient evidence on the staircase, original staircase, on the floor boards, and as well as on the wall that would suggest where the original or previously removed staircase is located. And within a residential property, it's this interpretation and layer of fabric changes will be sufficient, in my opinion.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you. Unless the panel has any questions? No? All right. Thank you. Yes.
Mr. Chair, panel members, my name's Gerard Teresi. I'm the town planner involved with the project.
Yes.
I've got some plans I want to show and talk to you through, which just illustrates the location of the request to cut back the... Sorry. Is it possible to circulate that? Which actually just illustrates the cutback. 1A and also 1D regarding the privacy screens. As the panel members, and I am the last speaker, as the panel members, the previous speakers spoke about, clearly we support the recommendation of approval before you. This is about just clarifying and looking at some of the conditions. I think the first thing that's really important to note, as Mr. Freeman acknowledged, there's been numerous discussions to come to the outcome we have with the council staff, and there's been numerous changes. But the bottom line also is that when you look at the development in terms of some of the key controls, in terms of FSR, landscaping, site coverage, this actual proposal is well compliant in that regard. The other thing which I really want to emphasise, and it's really coming to that first condition regarding condition 1A, regarding the setback, the image which you've got indicates in the actual orange the area which we've been asked in that condition to actually remove on the first floor. from our perspective and what we've tried to illustrate in this diagram, we've shown you the BLZ line, which actually exists in terms of the council's controls. If you look at the BLZ control, you look at the FSR control, you look at landscape control, and you look at the site coverage control, all the objectives of those are about managing bulk and scale. So what we've got here is a development which is actually compliant in terms of the foreshadowed outcomes in terms of built form. So the area which we've been asked to cut back is actually within an area which we're, in our view, is entitled to seek approval for. It has no amenity impact, as previously the speaker said. There's no overshadowing impact. And one of the key things, too, is to acknowledge that there is substantial separation between our building and number 65. So, therefore, when you look at the rationale, the reason the condition's been imposed by the officer in the report, it is about bulk and scale. That's why it's been recommended. It's not because there's an amenity impact, it's because there's a concern about bulk and scale from the deck of number 69. When you look at the layout and the approved plans of 69, all the living areas are orientated to the rear. They're not orientated to the side. Yes, there is some side window, but at the end of the day, the main focus is actually to the rear, which is pretty standard for most properties. Nothing precludes that owner at 69 to also develop in that area, because that would also be compliant with the BLZ. So in our view, we're saying that we don't believe that condition is worthy to be imposed. In terms of condition number 1D regarding the privacy screens, if you can see in the design, I can use the same plan which I've presented to you. You'll see we've actually provided privacy screens to the sides of those two terraces. To turn around and put a return on those terraces, in our view, is just really an overkill. There is no... The reason we've put those privacy screens on the edges is to protect privacy to the adjoining properties. There are a number of decks in this area. None of those decks have privacy screens to the side, and the whole objective of those actual privacy screens are in fact to provide an angle view and vision from the living area, which is fundamentally the area where is going to be greatly occupied. So panel members, we feel that condition is also onerous. I do want to touch on, if I could please, some conditions in the operational consent which do refer to opaque glazing. There's a number of conditions which we have no concern about. It is condition 7 of the development consent. And I can just quickly walk you through those. Condition 7, which is on page 74, lists 5 windows in which the council has specifically requested that there be opaque glazing. And I understand that in after hearing that conversation. But the windows I want to talk about is particularly window F3, F4 and F6. All those windows are windows which are facing directly to the northern elevation, not to the side. We're happy with the recommendation for opaque glazing to the side boundaries, to the link and to the dining room facing back, and obviously the suggestion of the condition to number 69. But to the actual rear elevation, what we've been asked to do is actually put opaque glazing to window F3, F4, and as well as to F6. We just feel that is, again, somewhat of an overkill in terms of this application. You will note on the plan I just provided to you, originally we did have blade walls, which council requested that we would remove. Those blade walls had a particular function, and that was to orientate the view and the outlook directly to the north. So that way we would actually not have angled viewed into the adjoining properties. Our preference is for those blade walls to be still reinstated. You will see to our south, that blade wall would definitely be still within the BLZ, so we wouldn't be breaching any controls in that regard. In terms of to our west, the other one was the east, not the south, but to our west. It would marginally breach in front of the average, in front of the BLZ if you took it between the two properties, but if you take the average, which the council's DCP also acknowledges you can, we would be compliant. Those two blade walls would actually achieve the same outcome, which is to ensure an angle view, and the view is actually directly to the rear. The properties to our direct rear, which is facing Wharf Road, are lower than us. There's no privacy issue in that regard. We've got no objections from those neighbours to our scheme. So we respectively ask if the panel could reconsider the imposition of the condition on those three windows on the basis of those blade walls being reinstated to achieve the outcome of just orientating the outlook and the view directly to our north, and therefore those elements would still meet the objective of the council's control and condition. That's pretty much all I wanted to say unless the panel had any questions.
Just to clarify, is that the blade walls for 3 and 6?
Or yes, yeah.
So if not 4?
So I guess in putting the blade wall next to window F3, that basically mean if you're standing at the window at F4, you're looking onto the blade wall. But again, if the panel was mindful that they feel concerned about that, of the three windows, that's probably one which, you know, could still stay opaque. But again, we don't believe there's a need to, because if you then look at the plans holistically, you've got a blade wall on either end, which is stopping the angle view. You've got then clear glazing, which looks directly to the rear yard. You've got on both sides of the terraces, which none of the terraces which adjoin us have any significant screens, which we would on our balcony. So therefore our whole view and vista which we're trying to achieve here is that direct northern orientation, which is the intent of the control in terms of the setback, as the officer's report talks about the 9 metres and the 45 degrees.
Just the, what is the length of that blade wall on F3?
The actual length of the blade wall would have been, if I go back to the original plans, because that would have been on the original plans. I think they were approximately, on the actual eastern side, it was 1.16 metres. Thanks, Simon. And on the, on the eastern side, it was 1.16. And on the western side, it was approximately 900. Yeah.
Thank you. In relation to these, all of these changes that you've required to be made to the conditions, you can see how much time it's taken of the panel, and we would, of course, be seeking some advice from the council about this. It would have been of greater assistance if this had all been in writing in advance, so that it might be able to be dealt with today. But thank you for this plan, which shows that you've handed up to us, DA06, and it shows the amount of space available in the new addition, and I think amply demonstrates that the space in the new addition is larger than the space in the heritage part of the cottage to the left of the plan. And it doesn't explain why it need this this building needed to be built on the boundary with number 65. Can you explain in terms of that what is the requirement to build on the boundary there?
I guess at the end of the day, like any site context, so what we did is when we first got engaged and we started doing the design work, we looked at the site context, and Mr. Vaughan sort of touched on the whole issue that with this particular site, it actually narrows to the back. So the whole objective was, in obviously putting no additional floor space to the front portion of the building, we actually tried to design the building where we didn't want to encroach any further to the back of the building. And because the property was narrowing up, we actually were trying to ensure that we achieved a reasonable level of floor space within the development. Because we saw there was greater separation to number 69, we felt it was logical to actually then build the building in that location, given the fact that when we looked at then the relationship from a bulk and scale point of view and from an overshadowing point of view, there was no impact. Again, when you look around this particular area, it's not uncommon to see built form built to the side boundary. And the fact that the heritage item also maintained to the western side a separation, we actually felt that that was a balance and a compromise in terms of what was the best outcome for the site. So it was fundamentally about trying to ensure there was no impact, but at the same time trying to achieve what was allowable in FSR. But in saying that, we never came in with a maximum amount of FSR. The design was always about ensuring a reasonable outcome and ensuring the building was lining up with our adjoining buildings, which I think that image which I provided to you tries to illustrate that, how it sits in between those adjoining buildings. Thank you.
I just want to ask about your diagram here.
Yep.
From what I understand from the council's condition about setting back the area in pink,
yep,
is to protect the deck on the ground floor.
Yes.
Is that your understanding?
Well, the way the report is implied is that it is to actually reduce the bulk and scale of that element as viewed from the deck. So that's my understanding. But as I said, the reality is that when you look at the layout of that approval of number 69, all the family room and living area is actually orientated to the rear. In terms of that deck, I don't know whether that deck actually has lawful approval. And I say that in the context and the preparation of our application, we actually did file searches of the adjoining properties to understand what was the layouts of those premises, because that's the right thing to do, so you can help position it. Now, from my understanding, there is no approval for a deck there. Yes, it was grass area, and I'm not saying it can't be used for passive recreational purposes, but the point is that the approval actually had all its living areas orientated to the north, which is the standard orientation.
But in terms of the building location zone argument, it's not really the building location zone impacts on the first floor in terms of the positioning of the line. It's more the impacts when you're on the ground floor of the property next door. That's how I see it from what's being proposed here.
Yeah, sure. But again, what we're doing, we're talking about a sign boundary interface. And what I've tried to show in this plan, we've got a 5 metre separation between built form on a side boundary, which from my experience doing a lot of work in this area is, you know, it's a rarity. I'm not saying that that means you don't protect it. And as I said, our view is that we've done that because we haven't come here and said, let's push the building to that corner all the way to the B or Z and sort of, you know, say there's opportunity and say we comply. The building actually is stepped back already. To turn around and take a chunk out of that corner to us, where it actually has no subsequent consequence. If it could be demonstrated that we were causing overshadowing to the adjoining property because of that, we can understand that from a planning point of view. But we as a team are grappling why we're doing it when we've got that interface and relationship.
Thank you.
Thank you. The panel has a number of matters to consider here, and we are going to have to adjourn to consider them and discuss them amongst ourselves. We'll probably take about 10 minutes or so, so we'll just take a 10-minute break. No, we cannot hear from you again, Mr. Perignon. You've had your go, and we have your written material. And we understand what the real problems are here. So we'll consider what we're going to do. We'll do that now. All right. The panel is going to need more time to consider this matter, and we note that there's a lot of people here waiting for other matters. So what we're going to do is defer this to the end of the items for consideration, because we're going to need more time to deal with what has been raised, and we'll deal with all the other matters next, if that's suitable to all. Unfortunately, that means you'll have to wait around in relation to 67 Ballast Point Road. So we'll stand that matter down and go straight on to item number 3, which is the proposed alterations and additions to an existing dwelling house at number 1 Cross Street, Roselle, which again the panel inspected earlier in the day. Mr. Lucas, you're here for that matter. Yes.
In this matter, there were some objections in writing sent to council, and the first one dealt with the question of additional shadowing in the backyard of the property in Napoleon Street, the adjoining property. What's confusing to us is that there are, in fact, two sets of shadow plans. Each have a description exactly the same, and we can't understand why there are significant differences in those shadows as shown in those two plans. They have chosen the one which is more favourable, which is understandable, but it does tend to indicate that there's some error in the preparation of planning about the shadows. Quite apart from that, whichever plan is adopted or is correct, on page 12 of the report of council, it described the area as being of a highly vulnerable nature. And so if there is some alternative to the design which would ensure that there's no further shadowing in that yard, then that would be of use to the neighbouring property. The second issue or objection which was raised was to do with the bulk of the development. And if you were looking through the back door of that property in Napoleon Street and looked across, you can actually see straight across to the following street that runs parallel to Napoleon Street. Now, whilst that's not a great view, it does give a little distance. And by sloping the roof of this new area the way they have, it tends to bring that distance quite up close to the property. And again, there could be an alternative to that. The alternative being this: the new work to be done has a ceiling which is higher than the ceiling in the rest of the house which it adjoins. And I'm not quite sure why that was intended, but if it came down to that level, we would reduce the issue of shadowing and of the bulk. The other alternative would be if the roof was sloped the way it is presently sloped, then there would be no affectation either of bulk or of shadow on the backyard of Napoleon Street property, the adjoining property. Council has answered the question of glare from the roof sloping the way it was, and that's acceptable. We raise no further issue in relation to that, and thanks for pointing that out. And there was an issue raised about consent to the demolition of an encroaching wall. We accept that no consent is required, but it was assumed that they would in fact need to come onto the adjoining property in order to be able to demolish, and consent would be available provided they undertook to repair any damage and clean up after them.
That's your 3 minutes, Mr.
Thanks,
Lucas.
Mr. Chairman.
Can I ask a question?
There's a question for you.
Yes.
Mr. Lucas, which are the shadow diagrams you say that are duplicated and that you can't understand?
There was one lodged with council on the 14th of August,
right,
and another one lodged in September, which are the ones which are presently in the council's report.
Thank you.
Thank you. There's no one here from the applicant. I think there is. Yes. Well, if you just give us a few moments, we'll discuss this.
it? The impact's very marginal.
Did he say it was or wasn't? Is the applicant?
You want to hear from the applicant? The impact's very marginal.
Well, yes.
Can I ask the question about the shadows of the applicant?
Yes. Yes, come forward, please. Yes.
Sorry, who are you?
Chris Jordan, the architect and applicant.
Mr. Jordan, are you able to explain the differences?
Yes.
We have a set of shadow diagrams amongst our plans.
Yep. Yeah, so there was the initial plans we submitted with the DA were for winter only, and then through discussion with Chirag, the planner, he requested some summer shadows. So those additional shadows are summer. Yes, yes.
There are two winter solstice plans, and they're the confusing ones. The diagram, the title on the diagrams are exactly the same, but the plans are in fact different.
Yeah, so that's winter, yeah.
And that's different to this one, which was the September one. So if you look at 10 o'clock, you've got that as opposed to moving the clock. You've got that as opposed to that. So there are differences.
Okay, yeah, okay, I'm not sure what's happened there. It may, yeah, I'll have to check that. I've printed out the original ones here, so I've got the yep.
So can you assist us,
Mr. Jordan? Yeah, there do appear to be some differences between the resubmitted shadow diagrams on the winter to the originally submitted DA drawings, which I'm happy to rely on the original submission.
Thank you. And may I just ask you, we've been out on the site and yep. I want to get the result of this application. It's necessary to have air conditioning units hanging off the side of the house, I think, in the vicinity of the side passage.
They were constructed some time ago. I'm not aware of when they were constructed. I believe they're for the first floor bedrooms. I'm not sure.
And that area they overhang, is that area that you own, or is it an area that over which you might have an easement?
I think that's a right of easement.
And who's the owner?
I'm not sure. We haven't looked at these. This hasn't been raised before. It's the first I've heard of it, so I'm not sure. It's not an area. We're looking solely at the back part of the house. Yes.
Going through 10 a.m., 11 a.m. and 12 noon, and then 1 p.m. and 2 p.m. And the council has, I think, in the report the shadow diagrams for June. And is there any need for you to explain that there's a major change in the shadows?
Are you saying that these shadow diagrams are incorrect?
Then, which revision did you have? Sorry.
They both show the same. That's my confusion. That's the 14th of August one.
When you say the 14th of August, where does it say that?
It doesn't say it on there. We know that that's what was lodged with council on the 14th of August. Took it from the council file.
Hmm.
Thank you very much to you, Mr. Jordan, and to you for bringing that to our attention. We've been to the site and we have assessed for ourselves from the council documents that the overshadowing is, in the opinion of the panel, marginal, and the council town planning report's approval should be upheld. We thank you very much for the opportunity to look at that, but we believe that the we are